Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm, and a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. This is the Wednesday edition. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today, and a nice rainy day here in Edmond. And we were just talking before about how it's these are the days where it's harder to get out of bed because it's just dark and raining and cold, and it's warm in bed, and it would just be nice to stay in there for a while.
It does seem like it stays dark until about 7:30 because pretty much because we haven't gone to the daylight savings time where we fall back, right? And also the fact that it's constantly raining and cloudy, it keeps it even darker than it would have been.
That's why I can't live, in the Northwest. I would never get out of bed.
They don't have to.
Is that what it is? Yeah, I would struggle with that. But we are enjoying the rain for sure. It's a nice gentle rain, which we don't get a lot of those in Oklahoma. We usually have the downpours. We've been having a pretty solid, steady rain for about 2 days. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that it could be up to 3 inches altogether, but no flood threat that I'm aware of because it's pretty gentle, pretty moderate in terms of how it's coming down.
It's been really pleasant. Like you said, it usually is like a deluge where you don't even want to step outside for a second because you're already soaking wet just from that. It's just been like a sprinkling, maybe a little bit heavier than a light sprinkling.
Yeah, it's been great. And I was just thinking this morning that, what a blessing it is when you have rain in due season, like moderate rain, as opposed to the fires we see in California or Houston being flooded or those islands that are being destroyed in the Atlantic pretty much with the hurricanes. It's such a difference when it's a nice gentle rain, and that's what God wants to do for the whole earth, moderate, gentle rain in due season. It's amazing. You talk about wanting, people always wanting more wealth and prosperity, I suppose. You get the weather going the right direction, and things just really blossom.
That is so rare now to even just have normal weather conditions year-round anywhere, because even if we get this gentle rain, we're still in the tornado alley, so we have that to deal with, and there's big, huge parts of the country that are affected by earthquakes or by droughts or by fires or by hurricanes. So it's so rare now to just see calm weather conditions that you can wake up in the morning and not have to be concerned about.
Those guys that love the extreme weather, the extreme weather crews, they're the only ones that'll be disappointed when Christ returns in the world tomorrow and things are nice. Well, they won't be the extremes.
Could you imagine their job? They're like, well, still not a tornado today.
Not a lot of fun to chase the moderate rainstorm like they want to chase the tornadoes in those vehicles. But we've been enjoying the nicer rain. Trumpet.com today. Top story is pivotal power. Turkey is changing and forcing the world to change with it. Turkey doesn't seem to have any friends. They kind of insult everybody, it seems like. Past and present trends explain why, they say here in the Trumpet. And Bible prophecy foretells its next move. So Turkey's right there between two worlds, two civilizations. You have Europe, and then you've got the Middle East right there where they are. So they're kind of between those two worlds. And they've made some harsh statements, I guess, against Europe. And Europe and them are colliding a little bit. And then, I don't know, they're just kind of their own rogue group there. But anyway, to understand what's happening with them, you can check out that headline at thetrumpet.com on pivotal power. And also related to that, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on Turkey at the Crossroads. That was from August 9th. And Turkey enters a dark new age. So we don't hear a lot about Turkey on the news. The thing that's nice about the write-up, too, is there's a map there in case you need a refresher on where Turkey is. You can get all that information there at thetrumpet.com. So we hear a lot about the NFL, and we hear a lot about storms, but not too much about the rest of the world and places like Turkey.
And they don't seem to care too much about if anyone likes them. I believe they shot down a Russian plane that was in its airspace, and so they were about to go to war with Russia. Germany, they've been trying to hold hostage with the migrant issue, say, well, we won't hold migrants here. We're just going to let them go through if you don't do what we want. Obviously, they hate Israel as well. They don't like America. I'm not really sure who their friends are. They've historically been a nation that will only hold alliances out of convenience for a short time, and then they could be on the exact opposite side the next time.
Yeah, and there's a Key of David program titled Turkey Will Betray America, so that kind of gets to the heart of the matter. You can look at that as well. That's another good one that ties into what's going on there in Turkey. That's one of the good things about thetrumpet.com. There are writers and in quite a few places around the world. Of course, Brett Nachtigall there in the Middle East, and Richard Palmer wrote this over in the UK there. Not only keeping an eye on those regions, sometimes actually being close to or in those regions and focused on what's going on there instead of, I guess, the U.S. media is, I'm sure every news bureau's got their foreign correspondent, but it seems like most of the issues are all social issues in the United States now, and we're just not paying attention to the rest of the world.
That does drive ratings for a lot of those networks, the fact that people are so they're so contentious when it comes to these social issues. But that man on the street perspective is extremely valuable to have correspondents around the world like thetrumpet.com does. And Mr. Nachtigall at times has given his view of the streets in Israel a mere block or two away from a suicide attack. And I believe Mr. Palmer at times has even talked about what it was like at one of these royal presentations in Britain. So that's really nice to see because, you know, we live in Oklahoma. We're pretty far away from those events that are taking place in other parts of the world. It does help to expand our views and to know what's going on elsewhere.
Yeah, I was thinking about Oklahoma news as you said that. And, of course, actually Oklahoma is in the national news with this FBI sting against college basketball assistant coaches, some, including the one from Oklahoma State, and one of the top guys at Adidas, the big shoe sportswear company. Turns out there's a little bit of bribery and so forth going on with college players. Serious business, could be 80 years in prison.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they throw those numbers around. Nobody's going to live another 80 years, especially at the age that these people are. But, yeah, things get serious pretty quickly. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects the sports landscape. It seems like, you know, we talked about this the other day, the entertainments of the United States, the things that, you know, is really is a sign of our wealth and affluence because we have the time and the money to get involved in these extracurricular activities. I love sports, but they're extracurricular. Yeah. And some people kind of make it their lives, but now those things are getting rocked, whether it's college, professional. It seems like even the entertainments that we've sought out are starting to have problems.
Yeah, that really is true, and it's almost like you can't turn anywhere to, I guess, find your supposed safe space. That's what they would call it. Everywhere now is full of strife and arguments and bickering and corruption in this case. I don't know if people were necessarily unaware that college teams were sort of paying players and their families under the table, but now the FBI is involved with it, which makes it pretty serious and means that they can lock people up for a really long time. And then elsewhere in sports, I was watching the SportsCenter edition, you know, with Michael and Jamel, you know, the 6 o'clock version.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just an extreme left-wing program. They are glorifying the protesting of the national anthem, and they're calling the president a racist. And it's like it's absolute fact. Whatever they say is true. They don't present any facts behind it. And so they're just infecting even our leisure time with these types of divisive comments.
The latest, the numbers I saw, you know, and it's if you believe the polls, I think it was about 63% of Americans are against the protesting.
Yeah.
Clear majority. And so, but again, that shows you that those radical ideologies, it's not about even what the people want in that sense. It's about them pushing their ideas and their agendas at everybody. And it's really starting to, you know, it's really starting to turn people off. And I think, and that's talked about someone on the Trumpet Daily Radio show today as well. Mr. Stephen Fleury talks about that NFL controversy a little bit. And, you know, people are starting to get really turned off by it. it's going to start affecting the money, the bottom line. Ratings are down 11%, I think, over the weekend, viewership. And, you know, I was even thinking about it. I personally don't have a bunch of jerseys of people or anything like that. But I've gotten a few over the years from my son. Like, you know, we have different teams that we like, and maybe I'll get him a jersey here or there. And, you know, usually you get a jersey of a guy that's he's successful. You know, you like kind of what he stands for in some level. But I've really had to rethink that even. I mean, if a player is going to be out there involved in all these protests, I don't want anything to do with it. And I think a lot of people feel that way. I don't support that. And when people start losing their jersey sales, they start losing maybe even attendance to games or, you know, people watching it on television, well, you're going to have a lot of time to protest. You'll be unemployed, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's all based upon people wanting to come watch you play a sport. No one's paying to get the political insight of these great scholars of the gridiron. I mean, let's be real here, and it's going to start affecting the bottom line at some level. I mean, I'm very torn. I'm a big Packer fan. I've always liked the Green Bay Packers. Grew up in that area. But now they're wanting to get into it, and I'm sitting here going, come on, guys, don't do this to me. But it's to the point where if it's that bad, I don't know, maybe I don't watch them anymore.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are deciding. Apparently, DirecTV is offering refunds as well to anyone who has the NFL Sunday ticket package due to the protests. So if people are upset over the protests, they can get a refund for the entire season of televised games. You could get all the games every week totally refunded because of what is going on with those protests. And the vast majority, like you said, don't like the protests. What do these men not understand? They're going to their workplace and they're turning away the paying customers. That's just insanity.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, whatever their big belief is on it, which I don't think most of them have a big belief. That's their business. But at the end of the day, if people stop paying you to play the game, you can play for free at the park. But nobody's going to pay you.
Yeah.
You know, when the NBA had their lockout a couple of years ago for a while, some of the players went around, you know, and they kind of were doing like a barnstorming tour where they were going to different cities and, you know, people could come to watch them play a little bit. And they were still, they had enough recent history with the NBA to where, yeah, people would go watch them play. But, I mean, honestly, if you don't have the big marketing machine and the television and all the promotion, Would you pay money to go watch these guys push each other around in the park? I don't care.
No,
they're biting the hand that feeds them, and they're making as Mr. Stephen Fleury points out, these guys are in the 1% earning category of the world.
Yeah,
and they're complaining. They're complaining that it's not fair. What's not fair? I mean, that's an honest question. What's not fair about your life? Or if they say, well, it's not about them, they're complaining about the U.S. The U.S. is the richest nation on earth. The poor people in this nation are richer than most people in the world. What's not fair about that?
And there has been a big movement to say that it's all about the minorities who are being oppressed, when in reality, it's poor and rich. The poor people of all races have way more in common with each other than the rich people of all races. So if you're a black rich man or a white rich man, you have way more in common with each other than a black rich man and a black poor man. And yet these NFL players are acting like they have everything in common with these poor everyday Americans who are struggling, and they actually have things that they have to, they actually have problems in their lives. They're not just kneeling and making a show of something and grandstanding in front of millions of people. These people actually have problems. They don't know if they're going to be able to pay their bills month to month. They don't know if there could be some violence in their neighborhood that could affect them. These NFL players are totally insulated from that. They are living in gated communities in nice mansions. They're very safe. They do not get abused by police, as they try to claim, but it's just all a lie. And Sean Hannity was talking about that a lot last night on his show, and he had Bill O'Reilly on for the entire show. It's just really powerful stuff. They were saying how the entire movement is based on lies, with Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, all these different cases, Michael Brown, where they're acting like the police or whoever else is out to kill black people when the facts of the situation say that it was always in self-defense.
Yeah, I think one thing that's been lost on the athletes, or the athletes have lost in their thinking, and as well as the media personalities, they're in the business, they're in the people business, in terms of you need to have people that like to watch you, or like to listen to you, or you know, whether you're playing the game or you're a journalist or whatever, that's who pays your ticket. It's the advertising and so forth. And you know, players now are so, I think they feel so entitled that they want to even attack the media. They'll attack the fans sometimes. They'll attack this guy and that guy, and it's like, but if people don't like you and they don't like what you represent, they're not going to pay to watch you, and then you have no job. Being really good at a sport is great, but if people don't want to pay you to see it, you're not going to get paid. I mean, there's a lot of great, you can pick any sport or anything, there's a lot of people out there that are very good at it, but it just never worked out for them to go to some sort of a professional league. And so what are they? Oh, they're really good in the pickup league on the weekend. But they're not getting paid millions of dollars because maybe they're just not good enough, or maybe they made some bad choices, whatever the case might be. But I just have this sense that, like, say, that some of these athletes or some of these media personalities, on especially the sports networks, feel like they have some great, amazing gift that, you know, they're entitled to all this money and it'll never stop no matter what they do. As soon as people stop wanting to watch you, you're out of a job. I don't care how good you are at a sport or whatever else. So it seems like they've kind of lost that, like, that reality that you need a little bit of PR, a little bit of savvy. Be kind to the fans. Treat them with some sort of respect because they're paying your huge salary.
It's so true. They really do need to think about that because otherwise they would have to get a job that an everyday American has to go through, where they have rough days at work, but then they turn to sports in their leisure time. They want to enjoy so a little bit of free time apart from all the struggles that they go through throughout the regular workday and such. These people with these sports analyst jobs and these athlete jobs are living leisure time as their job, and they need to understand that that's a huge blessing. That's what a lot of people would like to be spending their time doing instead of slogging away, you know, laying down railroad ties or whatever the tough manual labor job might be.
They're living in a dream world. Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host Stephen Fleury talks about quite a few topics, some news topics, but also gets into this NFL controversy, and he looks at it from this standpoint. How about being thankful to God for all the blessings that God has given to the United States? And he goes through quite a few passages where people are unthankful, they're ungrateful after being blessed, and they lose those blessings. And that's what Abraham Lincoln was getting at, right? During the Civil War, did we do something to, you know, have this great land that we live in? You know, you hear a lot today about white privilege. Well, whatever race you are, you're privileged to live in the United States.
True.
Did you do something? Did I do something for that? Did I, you know, plan it all out to make sure I was born in this particular area? None of us did, but we're very blessed to be here, and. You know, as he points out on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, how about being thankful, earning millions of dollars playing a game, or whatever it might be, even people that aren't in that situation. He brings up some statistics. I think he said there's 2 billion people on this earth that have never turned on a light switch.
Wow.
They don't have access to electricity. You know, they don't have time to protest everything because they're trying to survive day to day. And people are over here, and you know, when you listen to what he says, and you really should today, it's just as shameful. I mean, it's a great lesson for all of us because it's very easy to not be thankful, but particularly these people that are at the top, and they are at the top of the hill, and then they're casting stones down at the rest of us. you know, maybe they won't be on the top of the hill for so long if they're not thankful to be there.
Yeah, and you mentioned white privilege. Really what it is rich privilege. What makes the world go round is money. So if you have the money, you can do a lot of things that people without money can't do. And I'm not against that in any way. I love the fact that you can be in this country and start from nothing and gain millions of dollars. But when those same people then turn around and act like they've been oppressed their entire lives despite making $20 million a year, that's where it just gets to be too much. I heard one commentator actually point out, what about the white fatherless child growing up in a trailer park in Arkansas? Where is his white privilege? How does this kid have white privilege? How does he have it any better than anyone else of any other race in that same neighborhood? How does he inherently by his race have a better chance of success? They're coming from the exact same background, the exact same environment, the exact same type of family situation in a lot of cases. How is that person going to automatically have a better chance of success just because he's white? It just doesn't make any sense. It defies all logic. But at the same time, only in America can you go from rags to riches. You can go from that trailer park to that gated community and make millions of dollars. It is possible. What a lot of people are doing in the media, though, is telling those people, especially the minorities, that it's not possible. How is it not possible if there are plenty of minorities who are wealthy in this country and making a great success of their lives?
Right. It's a lie. And a lot of the ones that are sitting there being the loudest about how you can't make it in this country are the ones that did make it.
Yeah, they're like
they're the millionaires.
They must have such an inflated sense of their own accomplishments. Like, what I did is impossible. No one else could ever follow this path. Right. Yes, they could. You worked hard and you got to where you are because of that. Anyone else could do it too if they really wanted to. If they really put in the insane amount of work that you did, it's possible. But what they're trying to do is say, well, you deserve a handout. You deserve to think that everyone else is against you and is racist toward you. That's just a poisonous way of thinking, and people will never succeed if that's how they're raised to think.
This is one of these white basketball coaches. I just say he's white because it ties into the story. And he's going on and on the other day off his soapbox about white privilege and all his problems. Okay, well, why doesn't he go down to the poor white communities, which there are plenty of, and give a lecture there about how they should be ashamed of themselves for barely making it?
They'd probably stone him,
yeah.
Honestly.
I mean, if that's his big opinion, go down there and tell them all.
Yeah.
That, well, you just got it made in the shade. Meanwhile, he's coaching players that are multimillionaires.
Yeah.
And they're predominantly minorities in this country. They're all of them. All of them are multimillionaires, and they're sitting there telling everyone else about how oppressed they are and they need to, like, get educated. Are you kidding me?
Ugh.
You guys are the rich of the rich. Yeah. You know, and I know there are people that are richer than that still, but you get the point. It's just insanity. They've lost all sense of perspective. The richest people are sitting there blaming everyone else for oppression, and they're the rich people. It's crazy.
Can you believe that, where they just boil it down to race or gender or sexual preference and say, because of this one thing, you will never succeed in this great country. You will never, ever sniff what we have gotten to achieve because of this one factor. In most cases, you can't control. You can't control your race or your gender. How in the world is that a good message to send to anyone? You've been successful. Why can't they as well? A lot of people, one guy in the NFL, Derek Wolfe, he's a defensive end for the Denver Broncos. He's a white guy. He came out of poverty and now is wealthy. And he said people like to find ways to protest today. That's fine. I'm not going to throw a fit about it. But I came from nothing, and I have plenty of in common with these other people of other races who are struggling in the country because I had nothing as well. But for some reason, it always comes down to race. Why does it have to come down to race when there are plenty of people who are poor, who are suffering, who are in some horrible situations regardless of what their color is, regardless of their gender? That's another big myth as well.
Well, these sports guys, I mean, they used to be heroes to where they gave a positive image, and you thought, wow, you know, I'd like to be like that guy. They were inspiring to young people. You know, why was Michael Jordan so popular? He was very transcendent in terms of crossing all races in his popularity. Because every kid in America and a lot around the world went out and tried to do his moves in the driveway. And, of course, most people can't do that stuff, but it was fun, and he was successful. And you aspired to to make something of yourself. I want to be like Mike, right? That was the commercial.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, he's the perfect example or anything, but I he did promote a pretty positive image. Work hard, be successful. And that's what people want to emulate. That's what gets you excited. Oh, the Bulls are playing tonight. I want to see what Mike does. I don't want, you know, these crybabies out there then lecturing everybody. What are the kids in America going to do? Go out in their driveways and get up on a soapbox and start lecturing the neighbors? Is that what they're aspiring to? You know, they do hold a position of influence. If they use it for good, it's a pretty neat thing. We've all been inspired by an amazing athlete or something like that. But, you know, how inspiring is it if they come out and just say, well, you'll never make it because of this oppressive system we all live in. By the way, I'm going to go back to my mansion now. It's just unbelievable to me.
That's why sports are so inspiring, because you look at a successful athlete and you say, well, if I work hard enough, either I could do what he is doing or I could achieve similar success in whatever field I'm in right now. And if you're constantly being told by those same inspirational figures that, no, you'll never be able to do what I'm doing right now in whatever field you put your mind to, well, what's the point anymore? I thought that sports was an example of human excellence on display for all of us to enjoy. Now it's just, well, we've gotten here, we've climbed the mountain, but we're going to do all we can to make sure that you are mentally defeated before you even start climbing up here.
Well, who are they selling their shoes to? NBA players or NFL guys? The impoverished people that they're saying are oppressed, they can't buy them, apparently. So who do they want to sell their stuff to?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem fair. Lower the prices so everybody can buy it.
True.
Or for the white coach that from that one team that wants to, he says, make white people uncomfortable. Well, he could start with himself, quit, and donate all your money.
Live in the woods.
Go live in the woods.
Yeah.
That would set an example, right?
Oh, yeah.
Give your job to somebody else. No, he's not going to do that.
Of course not.
He's going to sit there and keep lecturing us. It's a backward situation, and people are getting pretty caught up in it one way or the other. But I think the really great point brought out on the Trumpet Daily Radio show there is that how about just being thankful for what you have? And trying to help your neighbor. Follow God's laws. How about that? Nah, no one's interested in that.
And why not also think about not talking so much? Why not bridle the tongue and make sure that before we say something, it serves some sort of a positive purpose? Even if there is a correction in it, at least make it useful or something that can help other people. These athletes are just throwing out words. They're making demonstrations that are helping nobody, and they're really actually tearing the country apart.
Yeah, that's the thing that's missing, is if there is something legitimate that they want people to look at, and there may be something somewhere, well, you can talk about it in a positive way, and you could give maybe a solution or an idea, but it's not that. It's just criticism. So it's a bad situation. But there's some about that on the Trumpet Daily Radio show today. Also, a little bit of an interesting note about the NFL controversy on the Trumpet Hour program today as well in the last word segment. So make sure you listen for those. Also, a historical note on this day in 1779, John Adams negotiates peace terms with Great Britain in the War of Independence, or the Revolutionary War, depending on how you view it. The history side I got this from says Revolutionary War, but I guess some people prefer the War of Independence. But that was back in 1779. They weren't playing NBA hoops back then or NFL football. People were fighting for their freedoms. Didn't have an option to go to leisure time activities because you were involved in a war. Many people were. And in fact, 1 in 20 able-bodied white free males living in America died during the war. Because they were fighting for freedom.
That's white privilege, isn't it? The fact that all the white men were dying.
It was their privilege to do it, and they did. Also, George Washington, he served, of course, there in the military and was the leader, and he was paid $0.
No.
He did it for nothing. He did it for freedom.
That's a real hero right there. That's someone to aspire to be, and the words coming out of his mouth were all edifying. He was always talking about God being at the center of the nation, God being the source of any victories that they could have won. And he actually lost more battles than he won, but God was still blessing him the entire time. And of course, the people wanted to make him king because he was such a good role model and such a great leader.
Yep. Amazing history there. And they were fighting for a cause, and that was freedom. And they wanted to have a free nation. And we've forgotten a lot of that history. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com. Well, shifting gears here, we are in the biblical fall holy day season. If the listeners are familiar with that, many of them are. God's holy days show us God's plan for mankind. You look at a lot of these news topics and the divisions and, you know, people or suffering or anything that's going on in this world, and people say, what is, you know, what's the plan here? Is there any plan to it? And there is. And there's this reprint article that you can find on thetrumpet.com, 7,000 years of preparation, and it talks about this holy day plan that God has, that the benefit of keeping God's holy days is it shows us what this plan is, so we remember it, so you don't get lost in the moment of the protests or, you know, whatever else is going on. There is a plan here. So it's a great reprint article. We're going to touch on some of it today. One of the most pivotal moments in history saw the universe and earth in chaos and ruin. You can find that in Genesis 1 and verse 2. The earth without form and void, and darkness upon the face of the deep. Isaiah 45:18 shows that the earth and all of creation was not created in vain. As a matter of fact, it wasn't made that way. Something happened to cause the earth and universe to be in ruin and decay. Scientists would have, I guess, all their opinions and theories on those things, but God lays it out in the Bible as to what happened. And of course, before mankind, God created angels, Lucifer primarily as the one of the top ones, and then of course a lot to help him as well. And they were here on this earth, as the Bible reveals. But Lucifer wasn't happy. He was not thankful. He didn't feel like he'd gotten enough, even though he was ruling the earth under God's direction. And so he rebelled, and the result was the earth being destroyed. We see the same sort of attitude today. I'm thankful, nothing's fair, everybody's out to get me, and we see chaos resulting again.
And that's the type of attitude that probably is more destructive than any other, because think about it, you could accumulate literal mountainous piles of wealth and yet always be expecting more. You'll never be satisfied if you're ungrateful. Doesn't matter if you inherit the entire world and you're in charge of everyone on earth. It doesn't matter anymore, because you're expecting more for yourself. That's exactly how Satan was. He was put in charge of over the entire earth. He could have had more than that if he succeeded on earth, and yet he just wanted it all right away. He thought that he was being held back somehow.
And yeah, that type of attitude, it's never satisfied. You wouldn't be satisfied unless you were the absolute king of all kings. You'd have to be God himself, which, of course, he was not available to that office was taken.
And who knows even then if that type of person or being would be satisfied.
And that's the thing about attitude, is that if we are positive and if we're thankful, even difficulties aren't that bad. But if we're negative and if we're ungrateful, nothing can make us happy. And that's spirits on the earth today. You can see it in so many things. But it originated here with Lucifer rebelling, turning to Satan. Mr. Armstrong wrote in The Incredible Human Potential that when the angels turned traitor on earth, their sin must have also brought simultaneously physical destruction to the other planets throughout the universe, which were potentially and conditionally put in subjection to them. Take a look up in the universe. We see pictures of these planets all the time. They don't look like they're very great places to be right now, but the Bible says God didn't create them that way. So something happened, and of course, Lucifer and the angels under him rebelled, war in heaven, and the results are there for us to see. Those planets are absolutely obliterated today.
The fruits of ungratefulness, it led to destruction, and we see the same thing in the country now, too, where we have people who are just taught all the time to be ungrateful, that anything they do receive as a blessing will be taken away by some oppressive power in the country. Just that horrible, poisonous way of thinking that is destroying people's lives before they even get a chance to make any success of themselves. That's stirring up a lot of anger in people. They're not happy. They're not grateful. They're getting angry, and that does lead to violence and destruction. We're going to see a lot more of that pretty soon. We've already seen a sample of it in the streets.
Right, and it's just a good thing to think about that whenever you see ruin and decay and destruction, something's not right. You know, things weren't meant to be that way. God didn't create things that way. He doesn't want us to have things that way. Of course, anything physical does tend to deteriorate. You have to keep it up, obviously. But, you know, you look at some of the cities in the U.S. and look at some of the communities. They're just falling apart. It's not the way that it should be. And then also, as you mentioned, the anti-authority attitude, which is what we see in these sports leagues or any place that the radical left, it's anti-authority. Where does that come from? Who is against authority? Satan's against authority. He's against God's authority. And whenever that attitude is prevalent, you know where it's coming from.
Satan is the ultimate anarchist. What he did, his mentality was, I don't have enough right now. My possessions are not sufficient right now, so I'm going to go take more. And so he went up, tried to throw God off his throne and tried to take the universe. And all of a sudden, they were throwing planets at each other, the angels and the demons, to see who would win. And sure enough, Satan didn't win.
Yeah, and if you're familiar with that work, Rules for Radicals, which a lot of the left enjoys, I guess, you look at the beginning in it, it's dedicated to Lucifer.
Yep.
who fought and got himself a kingdom, the guy says, the author.
Could it be any more obvious,
yeah,
the connection between this radical left movement and Satan himself?
It's the attitude, and you can see it. And so what did God do here? He was not caught off guard, as many people in religion even think, that there was a rebellion with Satan, and then also further on with Adam and Eve. And the world sort of, or the religion, the world sort of thinks, Christianity, I guess, that, you know, well, Satan, you know, fooled Adam and Eve, and now it's this battle, and God was not caught off guard at all. He formed a plan, a 7,000-year plan, in fact. Now, don't be confused by this. It doesn't mean the universe has only been here for that amount of time. It means there's a particular plan for mankind. And we are in this plan today. Most of the world, of course, is oblivious to what God is working out here on Earth. There's just not much understanding about this at all. And so the way to understand this is the Feast of Tabernacles. That pictures the seventh day of that week of millenniums, the last great day, the eighth day of that festival is an entirely separate holy day, and it pictures the culmination of the entire plan. So, and, you know, people might think, well, Feast of Tabernacles, I haven't heard of that before. It's in the Bible. So it's pretty clear where it comes from. And this reprint article on the 7,000-year plan says this: looking around at the destruction wrought by angels, God knew that the only way he could spread the joy of his government and his family to the whole material universe was to reproduce himself. You notice that God has joy and peace. You don't see a lot of joy and peace today. So you don't see a lot of God's influence either. It says he wanted real children, real sons, sons reared up to exhibit his very own righteous character, who could be put anywhere in the universe without supervision and remain totally committed to the supremacy of the God family. You couldn't do that with very many people. Put them someplace and say, take care of it, I'll be back in 30 years. You don't know what you'd find when you came back. Maybe some people would do pretty well with that, but most people it would be anarchy and chaos.
Too often we would find either a destroyed planet or whatever the realm is, or we would see it totally fortified so that whenever the actual ruler comes back, the person who was put in charge is actually trying to take charge himself.
That's true. That's a good point. And so God decided to create human beings. That's where human beings come from. Didn't come from evolution. And he gave human beings something very special, which is marriage and family. You know, look around. Not a lot of squirrels getting married. Angels don't marry. So why is marriage and family under attack today? Who's attacking it? Is God attacking it? Or is Satan attacking it? Satan's attacking it. You know, so all these movements, all these social constructs that they're trying to put up to make all these bizarre arrangements, that's where it comes That's the origin of it. Satan hates family. He hates marriage. He hates all of those things. The idea that, that man just kind of invented marriage somewhere along the way, it's not true at all. God created marriage and family for a very specific purpose, and it's to teach a man about the God family. You destroy that. Go tell somebody that has never had a normal family situation about the God family. It's going to be hard for them to get it because they haven't experienced it in this life.
That's a great point, because so many people have come from broken homes. The divorce rate in this country is around 50%. The God family has a father, it has a mother, it has children, and that is the structure. It's not two fathers, it's not two mothers, it's not a single parent. It's a loving relationship. It's not an abusive one like we see in a lot of families today. So it does help a lot for people to have a right family in this physical life so that they can picture what that family spiritually is like. Marriage has existed as long as human beings have. Adam and Eve were married. It didn't just come out of the air into their minds. God created them to want marriage, to want family, and to at least perpetuate it. Even when they rebelled against him, those institutions continued.
And if you're, you know, eyes are open to this and you're savvy to this, you can understand why some of these things are attacked so strongly. That's why marriage and family is attacked from every angle. That's why any institution is attacked, is because Satan hates it. That's why he attacks it. He doesn't attack things that benefit him. He attacks things that are against his designs. And the point is made here, though, that humans were made flesh, subject to death. I think we understand that because we all know that happens. They would have to prove themselves first and voluntarily choose to live righteously before God would give them eternal life. Of course, there's a misconception there. Some people think that man has eternal life. They don't. If they failed, God could just allow them to die and return to the dust of the ground. You know, and it's a sad thing if people reject God, but at the same time, it's very merciful for God. He doesn't want another Satan roaming the universe that can never die and has to be miserable forever. It's better to just be done with it than to live on in misery.
Yeah, that actually does show how merciful God is. People think that is cruel, but there's no logic to that way of thinking. To think that that's cruel makes no sense at all when they would be suffering forever. There are a lot of people who today are living in mud huts or they're starving to death. That type of suffering is a result of sin on some level by somebody, and that's going to be put to a stop pretty soon. But the people who chose to reject God, if they had to live forever, they would always be living in those types of conditions. They would always be suffering in pain, in horrible family relationships and friendships. It's actually a good thing that their lives can end so that they don't have to live like that for all eternity, for millions and billions and trillions of years, suffering like we see so many people suffering today.
Yeah. Thankfully, most people will choose God's way when their minds are open to it. And that's God's plan. That's what his holy days show. And God wants to reproduce himself. And Mr. Armstrong wrote this. He said, so the angel potential was to take over the entire universe, to improve and finish the billions of physical planets surrounding the uncountable stars. Scientists say that there are 100 billion galaxies, and every galaxy is 100 billion stars. I mean, it's just, you can't even wrap your head around that. And people do wonder. I mean, they look up and they think, why is that there? What is that doing there? Well, it's waiting for God's family. That's why it's there. Seems pretty fantastic, but why not? We're on this earth. I mean, even people that are thinking a little bit say, well, why couldn't we go make an earth on Mars? Well, we don't have the physical power to do that, but they're at least thinking in the direction of, like, why wouldn't we go out? They want to do it now, and it's not time yet, but that is God's plan. Adam and Eve sinned, as people know. Satan deceived Eve, and Adam went along with his wife. And this is where so many religions get off track. They think that God was kind of caught off guard, and, oh, what am I going to do? Not the case at all. Verses 23 and 24 there in Genesis. Therefore the Lord sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the tree of life. This is the point in the biblical narrative where God cuts off mankind from his spirit for 6,000 years, except for a very few that he works with in preparation for being teachers and rulers in his kingdom. But he's not just, he cut man off, but also it's to teach man a lesson. You know, that, okay, you can go your own way. You can choose your own government. You can choose to kneel for an anthem. You can choose whatever you want to choose. But then you're going to reap the fruit of it one way or the other. You know, some nations choose communism. Well, you reap the fruit of communism. And that's what we see with the 6,000 years. And that answers so many questions for people because they see suffering. They see destruction. And they say, well, why? Why would a God allow this? Well, we chose it. God didn't tell us that. He told us to do differently. But man chose it himself. And so we've got this almost 6,000 years now of history showing what happens when we go our own way. And there's not a lot of bright spots, if any. There are no bright spots.
We have to remember that we did choose that. That's really something that is extremely important for us to know. A lot of people actually turn around and blame God for the suffering they see in this world. The devastation after a hurricane or after an earthquake or after a terrorist attack. People always ask where was God, but they don't ask where were they for God before that situation. People blame God despite not even having him as a part of their lives in a lot of cases. So that doesn't even make any sense. Suffering is a result of mankind's choice from the very start. Adam and Eve chose to follow Satan instead of God. We would have all made the same choice too. That's just the sad part of it, because we have a human nature and Satan is very persuasive. He says that we can get an eternal reward right now doing our own way, living in rebellion, but we can still obtain the universe right now. And people believe that. People believe that we have eternal life already because Satan told them that we will be gods, that we are gods already.
Yeah, it's a lot of confusion out there. But again, Satan's a god of this world, and so, and he's the master of deception. I mean, he makes things look good. That's why they're enticing. His way of life, his way of thinking, and a lot of it comes down to that idea that, well, you can get what you want right now. You don't have to wait. You don't have to follow any sort of laws. That's really at the crux of sort of his sales pitch. But that's not the way things work. And there's always terrible, terrible kickbacks, even if you can maybe get a little bit of what you want right now. And that's what the world is struggling with. But again, when you look at God's holy day plan, it puts everything in order and you understand what the plan is. And the Feast of Tabernacles pictures the millennium. And that's at that 1,000 years right after the 6,000 years of man's rule. Christ returns, pictured by the Feast of Trumpets. And then you have this Feast of Tabernacles. Of course, there's a Day of Atonement in there as well, but we're focusing on the Feast of Tabernacles today. And this article says, what will be God's intent during the millennium? Consider the projects we'll be undertaking. With great effort, we will be rebuilding whole cities, entire nations. Even before, say, we know there's cataclysmic war coming if you read Matthew 24 and other prophecies. Even before that, you'd have to remake cities today. Even if you started today, you'd have to remake them. They're all falling apart, right? The infrastructure is falling apart. It has to be changed. Entire nations have to be rebuilt. Colleges have to be raised up with proper education. Homes and farms. A utopia has to be created. And it takes effort, and it takes time, and it takes work. And that's what that millennium period will be for. All of it preparatory for the last great day, which is, of course, when everybody that ever lived but never knew God's way is resurrected humanly. They have a chance then to learn. That answers the big question a lot of people have about religion. Well, if you're not saved today, quote unquote, you're lost forever. What about all the billions of people that never heard Christ's name? Well, God hasn't forgotten about them. That's part of the plan.
Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong wrote as well about how it would make no sense for God to have a heaven where there's a nice mother up there and she's enjoying sitting on the clouds playing the harp, but every day she has to look down into hell and see her rebellious son screaming and burning forever. That truly would be cruel and unmerciful. People say the way God actually does things is unmerciful. Consider the actual alternative that they are teaching in their churches.
Yeah. Nobody's going to get the bad end of the deal here. Now, I mean, if people rebel, that's the end for them.
They will burn, but it'll be over.
Sure,
right away.
Right. They won't go on and on with it. But most people will choose God's way, and that's the encouraging thing. When their eyes are open to it, when their minds are open to it. And so there's a lot of detail in here, obviously. And if it's something you haven't really heard before, you say, well, wait, I've got a few questions here, which is good. And there's this great reprint article at thetrumpet.com on the 7,000-year plan that you can read. And, of course, there's a lot of information you can pull in from other sources there at the Trumpet as well. But in Revelation, it talks about this last great day. I saw a great white throne and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. All the people that lived and died over the years, and how many is that? Billions, multiple billions. They're going to be resurrected. They're going to have a chance again. And it's everyone who ever lived that was cut off from God. It's the people the people from Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, the greats among men, the worst of mankind, everyone that didn't know God's truth. They're going to be resurrected, and they're going to be given a chance to learn God's way and accept it.
I've heard that something like 50 billion people, I mean, over the course of 6,000 years of human history and all the people who have died in wars, I mean, a lot of horrible suffering that people have gone through before dying, you know, even like sex slaves, child sex slaves, those types of horrendous situations. Even people who have lived a long life, relatively happy, who without knowing God ended up dying. All those people, whatever their background, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, all those people will have another chance, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's amazing that they're going to. And of course, I mean, there'll be probably certain judgments there depending on what people did over time. I'm not sure exactly how that'll all be come down, but all everyone will have an equal chance. All the people that have lived in, you know, just a day and died and didn't know. Yeah. I mean, because it's horrible. If you see children that are born and they don't live long and they have these terrible diseases and you see it happen all over the place and you really feel for them, it's hopeless for those parents. It's hopeless unless you know what God's plan is. Doesn't mean that it's easy. It's obviously still a trial, but you know they're going to have a chance. Mm-hmm. It's not the end. And God's not that careless with human beings and what he's doing. And so, again, but if you don't have the understanding of God's holy day plan, you're just lost in this present. And there are a lot of religious ideas out there, but they don't really satisfy because they don't give answers. They don't have answers because they're not totally from the Bible. You know, people say, well, somebody died. Well, they're in heaven now looking at you. Have you ever heard anyone say they went straight to hell? I've never heard that. You know, when somebody's died, and they're like, well, they're probably in hell right now burning. Yeah. I mean, everyone's always going to heaven when they die. And that's not God's plan either side of that. He has a plan. It's very specific and it's very practical and it's laid out in his holy days.
Yeah, that's the beauty of all of it. Even when we see such things that are going on in this country and around the world that are really sad or disappointing or sobering, at least we know there's a better future to all of it, that all these people who are suffering or are just totally angry and ignorant today will finally know what is right and what is wrong. They'll finally be given a chance, a true choice between life and death, having known all the facts before they make that choice. A lot of people today are choosing death without even really understanding the difference between the two ways of life.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and it's really something to picture, and this is going to happen. It's God's word that, you know, this millennium period after Christ returns is preparatory for this last great day where all of a sudden you are going to have billions upon billions of people that have lived and died, never knew God's way, are resurrected, and somebody's got to teach them. And it's going to be, of course, the people that have been trained during the millennium and before that as first fruits, and there's a lot about that. And on thetrumpet.com, you can find a lot of information, especially the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence course gets into all kinds of specifics there. But that, you know, that's a real job. That's a legitimate thing that's going to happen, a practical thing that's going to happen. And it's, you know, some people are never going to have heard anything about this. And some will have a lot of ideas that are wrong that they've thought of. And so they're going to have to be taught and worked with. And it's going to be an amazing, amazing time. Everybody can probably think about even people that they knew, you know, personally at some point, or, you know, a long lost family member from years ago that you kind of knew a little bit, or something to where you have more of a personal interest there. Those people are going to live again. And that's the great hope. There's no way you can look at that and say it's not hopeful. And what's so interesting, and of course Satan hates this plan, and that's why he deceives the world on it. But when you look at the hope in there, why would anybody not want to look into it? It's hope. It's completely hopeful, but yet at the same time, people just don't want to. They want to reject it. They just don't want to look at it. And of course, God hasn't opened everybody's mind yet. That's the understandable part of it. But yet, it's even just practically, it's a better plan than anything else that you might have heard of. And this one is the real one.
It's far above the squabbling and the bickering that we see all the time too. If we would turn our attention to a message like this and to a future like this, where literally every person who has ever lived will have a chance to live the right way. People of all races and backgrounds will be able to live together in peace. They'll all be grateful for the blessings that they receive. They will not be suffering day in and day out because they're actually making choices that will lead to blessings. That's a much better way of life. That's a much better way of spending our time reading about this rather than getting into disputes over statues and anthems and all these other nonsensical arguments that we engage in today.
Yeah, there's real hope here, but it's all part of God's holy days. Check out this article. It's a reprint. It's free at thetrumpet.com. 7,000 years of preparation, and it gives you understanding of where we are today and what you can expect to see in the future. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. For myself, Dwight Falk, and for Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.